It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
This is Zerline Cold, a.k.a. SS White. Welcome to Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
This is Mad Mage 999, DM on Realms of Eternity.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Realms of Eternity and the Neverwinter Night Podcast. And you're listening to the 191st episode of Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the MMO Neverwinter by Cryptic. Well, tonight we are rejoined by Zerline Cold. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Briefly, we were able to talk on our roundtable discussion in episode 189, and really wanted to get you back on the show to talk about, you know, all the stuff you got going on. You have a lot of great background with the storytelling and everything. And, you know, if you want to get started off, can you tell the audience a little bit about stuff that you've done to get into Neverwinter and, you know, just how you got there?
I first started playing MMOs in 2004, and I immediately started searching for a game that was based in our A Salvatore's worlds. And in 2013, a friend was telling me about Neverwinter Nights, and I was searching for that online, and that's how I found out about Neverwinter. And I got into beta for the game. During beta, I didn't do anything with the foundries, but I had a couple of in-game friends that made foundries, and I would test theirs, and I thought it was very interesting. I've been a writer for pretty much my whole life, but I hadn't written anything in about 4 years. And during open beta, I started tinkering around with the boundary system, and it got me back to writing. It rekindled the writer in me so that I was able to tell stories. So that's how I got into the foundry part.
That's really cool. You had mentioned that your friend told you about Neverwinter Nights. Did you actually get in to check Neverwinter Nights out, or did you just jump right into Neverwinter?
Sadly, I could never find enough information about Neverwinter Nights when I was searching for it. It was hard to find the information about it, and I didn't know anyone who already played it or anything. So when I found Neverwinter, I immediately got into beta and I got involved with that.
Yeah, I can imagine it'd be a lot easier to find information about Neverwinter than Neverwinter Nights. It is hard to find stuff sometimes about that. Another thing, too, that you brought up about how you wrote for years and you took some time off from writing and you got back into it. What particular thing about Neverwinter Foundry, like, really got you, like, your creative energies going again? Like, really, what piqued you on that?
Mostly being able to tell a story, not only with words. You know, words are obviously the most important part, but being able to create the world so that people could see my characters and see, you know, my scenery, see the homes and the forests and whatever my story is about, they could actually see it and interact with it instead of just reading words on paper.
Very cool.
What can you tell us about the quest that you developed?
Okay, my first quest was called Cold Acres, Counting Chickens, and that was my learning experience. That's how I learned how to use the Foundry Editor. It took me about 3 months to get that one where it was fully polished. And basically, I built a home for my three main characters, which was Zerlin, Athena, Timothy Hanar, and Zassia Aim. Those are actually my three main in-game characters also. I built their home, and then they had friends show up, their neighbors. And it was a very cute, fun quest, which is kind of how my writing style is. I don't write a lot of combat in my quest. I've been accused of being a tree hugger, I guess. A tree hugging hippie, I've been called, because I'm all about peace and friends and lovey dovey stuff. So that's what my quest was mostly about.
You're serious? You've actually gotten those types of comments about your content?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty harsh there of me.
Yeah. I'm kind of a softy. I really am.
Well, you know, not the, I mean, I'm trying to interrupt, but the fact of the matter is, I think that you need that. I think you need that in balance, counterbalance with the vast amount of the content that I'm sure exists in Neverwinter is strictly or heavily combat based. I would, if you were to add it all up and have a good, you know, statistical, you know, rendition of the entire, you know, content, you it would have to be staggeringly more combat or, you know, that type of based campaign.
Right. See, my thought on that is basically every quest is going to have combat. There's nothing special or unique about it. The only way to make it special and unique is the story, you know, and the scenery, but the story has to be different because every quest has combat. So if all if you're just focusing strictly on combat, it doesn't set your quest apart from anyone else's. That's how I see it.
No, that's true. I mean, and I know from our own writing and things like that, I mean, we've worked in our stuff. I mean, it is more heavily combat based, but you know, at the end of the day, we do work in that type of stuff into the campaign because you need it. I mean, if it's all just, okay, here's a bad guy, let's go kill him. Here's this challenge or threat and go kill it. And there's like nothing to emotionally tie you to what you're doing. I don't think that, I mean, I don't know. I think at some point it just runs together or you lose the effect that you're trying to get.
Yeah, I've played quests that had just tons and tons and tons of combat. And I remember one of my favorite ones, and I'm not a big fan of the combat, but I played this quest and I'm thinking it was like a half an hour of just constantly killing stuff. I mean, it was almost nauseating to go through so much combat, and I got to the end, and when I got to the boss, I was able to talk to him. That was one of the first times that I had saw that someone put in where you actually have dialogue with the boss before you fight them. And he tells me, "I can't believe you made it past my army." And when he said that, it made it all worthwhile because I felt like I had fought an entire army, you know, but it was still the story, the way that author brought the combat into the story made it worthwhile.
I don't know how many people would really think to put something like that in there, particularly, especially after you go through such a long run, then you finally get to the boss or, you know, whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, they actually break down and have a conversation about, you know, "I can't believe that you did X, Y, and Z." I mean, you don't see that every day, especially with, you know, custom-grown content. You know, a lot of times, you know, you would have to actually purchase a game or the original campaign material where you'd see some more stuff like that, where it's more thought out.
Okay, well, my first one, like I said, it was called Counting Chickens. And I had used a map that was pre-detailed. It was a forest, but it had some farmland. It had cornfields in it. And it was a really, really nice map. And people liked that quest. It had 118 reviews, and 92 of those were 4- and 5-star reviews. With Module 1, that map was corrupted. And so I had to withdraw that quest permanently because I had so many details and so many things that were so heavily dependent on the map the way it was. And there was an issue with that particular map, so it had to be rebuilt from the dev side. So everything was moved. So then I had things that I had placed that were out of place now because the trees moved and the rocks moved and whatever. And also there were trees in the cornfield and there were floating bushes and things like that. So the map was messed up. And I had to withdraw my quest because my quest, you know, there were other people that had the same map and they were able to fix theirs. But for my quest, it was so heavily dependent on the map, I had to withdraw it. So with the support and encouragement of my friends at Scribes Enclave, I moved on and I built another quest called A New Home. And that's just what it's about. I used a new map and I built a new homestead from scratch. And I'm gun shy now of using pre-detailed maps. So all of my maps now are blank and I build them. And that's doing really well. It's still alive. It gets a lot of plays. The comments that I get on that one are usually that the first map has stuff floating and, you know, comments that are about what's wrong with the map, which is why I left that map. And I've tried to explain that everywhere on the forums, in the dialogue that the player finds in the quest that tells the story of what happened to it, people aren't reading that, and they're just commenting on how messed up the map looked. But people like the new map, and in that particular one, it seems to have a lot of people that play it for a daily. Seems to be a pretty nice daily. All the combat is on the first map, and it's pretty open as far as, you know, you just run around and kill all the Feywild enemies that came onto my map and tore it up. So
yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, well, it's also frustrating to have to go back and rework, you know, stuff that you probably shouldn't have to rework.
And right.
Especially when you think it's done.
It was, the week before Module 1 hit, I was getting a new review, like, every day. One or two new reviews every day. And they were all, like, 5 stars or a couple of 4 stars. So it really hurt, you know, to lose it.
Yeah.
And the only way I was able to move on was because of my friends in Scribes Enclave who didn't want me and so I got the idea to just build a new home, and I did that quest. It wasn't ever supposed to be a popular quest. I didn't care if anybody ever liked it. It was just a personal transition for me to move on from what I had and move on to something new. And that's why I made that quest. But it is actually doing pretty well on its own. Then I did an actual story quest. My first two quests were silly little happy-go-lucky quests. My first story quest is called Grandmother, and it takes the player into Cormanthor. To my main character, her grandmother lives in Cormanthor, and it takes the player there to bring her back to. And I wanted to talk about this one review I got. I was up to about a 4.06 adjusted rating, and I got my first 1-star review on that quest, and it dropped me down to 3.97. But the comment with that quest was, absolutely horrible, way too much personal lore and liberties taken, and just more. So someone worry, and I just thought that was pretty interesting, because most people, that's what they like about that quest, is that it's got story in it. And then I also have a quest called Harvest Dinner, which is only available in November, and it's kind of like a festival, and there's no combat in that quest. It's just games. The games are, from my end, pretty complex to make it look random. From the player's side, you can win or lose the game random. So nobody can figure out how to do it, or they always win the game. But you can still complete the quest. You don't have to win all the games to complete the quest. But it was just a fun little quest. I only got about 10 reviews on that because it was only up for about 2 weeks. This past November.
So you can actually set like visibility dates on the quest so that they only show up a certain time of year? Or...
I just withdrew it December 1st. You can go in and withdraw your quest, and I did that on December 1st.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if they had... I haven't been in there for a little while, of a shame to say, but yeah, I never seen nothing like that on there. So that'd be kind of cool if they, you know, you would have something like, okay, this quest is available between like this date and this date, like for like a winter quest for the winter time or something. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's, you know, I just chose one holiday, and some of my friends were telling me that I could redo my festival grounds for all the different holidays and seasons. And I'm like, no, thanks. You know, yeah. Fall is my favorite time of year, and you know, that's what I wanted to do. So that one, you know, hopefully I'll have more time to add to it. So this coming November, there'll be there, and there'll be new things there. There's interesting characters to see. But like I said, there's no combat. You know, most of my feedback, it's either people really like it because there's so much story and so much scenery and so much focus on my characters, or they hate it because there's not enough combat. And for my stories, the combat is just to kind of enhance that part of the story, but there's no focus on it. I don't have custom enemies and big boss encounters and that sort of thing. I just have just a little bit, just the bare minimum to tell the story.
Which, you know, there's different lines of questing. I mean, even in the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, you know, custom development realm, I mean, there's, you see, places where you have this big epic grand story, but then there's plenty of places or environments where, you know, they're more of the type of quest that you're talking about. And it's kind of the opposite, you know, with those environments, like Neverwinter Nights 2 and 1, is it seems that those seem to be getting more of the like long-term players and the traffic than what's typically seen with the heavy combat and stuff. So, you know, what you're doing is, you know, at least in the Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 space, it's definitely something that more players gravitate towards long-term.
Right. And, you know, people want the combat to get their XP to level up and to get loot. Well, at some point, they hit level 60, they don't need the XP anymore. So there has to be another, you know, attraction to it. And I guess that's kind of the audience I'm going for, is the people who, they're not there for the XP, they're not there for the loot, they're not there for the rewards. They're there to see someone's story, because that's why I like to play Foundries, is to see someone's story.
Right.
So that's the audience that I'm targeting, I guess.
Yeah, and I think with environment, the amount of people that are playing Neverwinter, that there should be plenty of people wanting to do both. I mean, you're always going to have people that are going to do the churn and burn. You know, we see it, you know, Mark, we see it regularly, you know, and where it's how fast can we get to level 40 and call it a day, you know, and have billions of gold and whatever else. But there's plenty of people who want to sit back and they want to read the dialogue of the story and, you know, take their time going through the stuff, not just running through and trying to get to the end as fast as you can, as much as you can. So
what do you have in mind for the future then?
The only quest I'm working on, I've moved recently and my home life is kind of changing around, so I haven't had a lot of time in game, but my quest, grandmother, like I said, you go to Cormanthor and bring grandma back to the house. And my next quest is basically taking her back. So that's the story that I'm working on right now. Those two quests kind of tie in together, which actually goes against my plans. Because originally I wasn't intending to have a campaign. I was intending to have several standalone quests just based off of the same characters. But with losing my first map and having to move, and then with these two stories, it's almost turning into a campaign. And I have considered trying to do a quest that does have more combat or unique custom boss encounters, one that focuses more on combat. That's not really my style, but I was considering doing something like that in the future.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you got a lot of ideas coming up.
Yeah, see, sadly, when I finished that map, I got ideas off of that map, off of my characters. I found a place to stick a cave, and I got ideas based off of that cave. You know, ideas based off of the neighbors, ideas based off of things that I had hidden, you know, details that I had hidden around that map. So losing that map, you know, it kind of also wiped out some of the ideas that I had. So some of those things I had to kind of take with me to the new map, and it just sort of changed things. And I do still have ideas based off of that, and some people who really pay close attention have picked up on these other little side stories in my current quest, and they've asked me, you know, are we going to see more of this later? And probably, yeah, because everything will tie together eventually, I think.
Yeah, very cool. What are some of your favorite parts and features of Foundry development? Like, what really stands out to you as, you know, something that you want to keep coming back to?
The music, the sound. I know we don't have a lot of soft music, but I like to be able to add the sound. There's a lot of sound effects, you know, and then the music. And I have had comments about how the way that I incorporate the music and the sounds is something different. People haven't seen that in other Foundries. I think that's pretty neat because it seems to me to be a fairly simple thing to add. But really, like I said earlier, I like to be able to bring a story to life. And it's not perfect. You know, there's some things that don't work right, and there's some things that we wish we had that we don't. But I love the idea of being able to do it. You know, I never played Neverwinter Nights, so I'm not sure how the user content worked there. But for me, this is my first experience with being able to build a story like that, and I really love it. And I know during the round table, we seemed to talk more about things that we didn't like or things that we wished we had, and I felt bad later because I actually love the Foundry. I love being able to make quests, and I think the people who are still dedicated to the Foundry and who are still making the quests are the people who are doing it for their own enjoyment. The ones who are getting mad and walking away are the ones who are just doing it for recognition, is how I see it, you know, reading the forums and what people are saying. And I'm not doing it for recognition. I've never submitted any of my quests to be featured. You know, I plan to later down the road, probably, but so far I haven't done that. But I like all of it, I guess. You know, the music is probably one of my favorite things, but I like, you know, I just like the whole concept of it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, and it's something else that, you know, may or may not, you know, come to pass, but it definitely is a possibility, is we actually, through the podcast, we had met a pretty accomplished author, Maxwell Alexander Drake, and we've interviewed him on a couple occasions face-to-face at the game fairs. You know, he does writing classes and different things like that. And, you know, he started out writing just novels, you know, fantasy novels, and getting them published and, you know, and working at that angle. But then down the road, actually as of this last year, he was approached by Sony to come on to be a story writer for the EverQuest series, you know, and out of nowhere, basically. So, you know, you look at that and you look at the stuff that you're doing for Neverwinter and things like that. A lot of times you'd be surprised on how one thing can lead to another and who's actually paying attention, you know, to quality of the stories and stuff, because they're looking for quality stories more than they're looking for somebody who can slap a mob together or a big battle or something, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something that just come to my mind is, you know, definitely pertinent, is the fact that you just never know. And it, because you have a writing background, that is something that you just don't know. It's there.
Yeah, I've used that excuse with my family. Some also, you know, all you do is play that stupid game all day, and I'm like, well, listen, you know, it's not just that. Especially with Scribes Enclave, you know, there's my name has been tossed around on your guys' show several times, and on the forums with Scribes Enclave especially, and I know there are at least a couple of the game developers who have taken notice of that. So, you know, I always think, you know, it's, you know, like you said, you never know. And there's some quests by some of my friends that are just jaw-dropping amazing, and I'm always thinking that, you know, to some people it might be a waste of time or it's just a game, but it's not. To me, it's the Foundry part. You're creating something. You're actually doing something and creating something. And like you said, you never know who's going to find it and what it could lead to later on. And people in MMOs, they talk about real life versus virtual life or whatever. And I don't say real life, I say home life, because the stories that I write, just like a story that I write to put in a book, the stories that I write for the Foundry, that's still part of my real life. That's still writing, you know, from my perspective. My home life gets a little messed up. Sometimes my home life doesn't allow me time to work on my writing, but my writing is still my real life. You know, I think any writer feels like that.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely will have, you know, your experiences and the things that are close to you are going to help influence the things that you write. I mean, your creativity. So, right. And it adds a lot to that. And the fact too, like even for us, I mean, heck, me and Mark, you know, we talk a lot of times, you know, what are we going to do after Neverwinter Nights too? You know, we're always looking for the next thing, and, you know, and the same way with the stuff like this. Okay. Well, what are these things going to lead to? But I'll tell you this, if you don't do A, you're not going to get the B. Right. You know, A leads to B. If you can't just, hey, some people can get the B, but straight off the bat. But typically, when you're trying to, you know, develop a particular talent slash occupation. You got to start somewhere, and I think the work that you're doing here is really good, and it really shows that, you know, hey, you can use this platform to really tell a story that you can write a book about it or whatever else, but at the same time you're using a graphical medium where it has music. It's almost like being a movie producer in a way, but you're using a video game engine instead of using, you know.
Well, I've been saying for a long time, a good video game is like starring in a movie. You know, you have a story and it sweeps you up the same way that a movie does. But instead of just watching somebody else doing all the stuff, you're actually the main character.
Yep, that's totally true.
What I really like about it is that, you know, the player gets to actually incorporate theirself into the quest. You know, they're actually doing something instead of just reading it or instead of just watching it. They're actually in there doing something with it. That's what I like about it.
What sort of challenges have you faced using the Foundry?
Losing my first quest was a pretty big one. Having to deal with losing my map and having to rebuild that, you know, which I think was more of probably a emotional challenge than anything. I guess the typical things that everybody struggles with, you know, there's bugs in the Foundry. There's some things that don't work right. And there's a limitation on details sometimes. So you have to be even more creative to get certain things to work the way you want them to sometimes.
You can relate to that, can't you, Brian?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we find that we run into, well, over the last 6 years plus now, we've run into that more than a few times and using the Neverwinter Nights 2 tool set. And, you know, sometimes you just got to step back and rewrite the whole damn thing, you know, or come up with a whole nother solution. It's pretty crappy. So, or you, Mark, with the tool set crashing on you halfway through something.
Yeah, that gets old.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there doing something and I had to actually rewrite the whole thing at least once and had to redo several parts of it, you know, a few times. So
we can relate, Steph.
Okay.
We can relate. So, you know, I know you talked about, you know, we talked about the challenges and things in the roundtable and in the last probably the 6 or 7 individual interviews we had before that, you know, and we also talked about features that you'd like to see added. Is there something else, like, since our roundtable that really came up to the forefront in your mind that, you know, as you're developing or that you'd like to see added still?
I'd like to be able to change certain details on an object. Maybe make it a different color, a different size, that sort of thing. And I know one of the things that's been brought up on the forums is which actually I think we did talk about this in the roundtable, is the voices of certain mobs. And another thing I'd like to see is I wish we could collaborate with someone somehow, allow someone else to come into our quest while we're still working on it, while we're still building it. I think that would be pretty nice, but I don't know exactly how they would be able to do that.
Yeah, that's actually something that, you know, kept us out of the Foundry, at least for now, is because, you know, being that we're a pretty large development group, you know, we want more than a handful of us work on our product. The fact of the matter is that, you know, one of the things we wanted to be able to do with the Foundry is to actually work on a campaign together, you know, divvy it up, you know, maps, you name it, whatever else. And that was like one of the things that really kind of held us back from being able to move forward with it. One thing for certain, this year for sure, I'm going to be trying to schedule some more interviews with Neverwinter development staff, probably Andy Velasquez. I'm going to work through Derek Thomas at Perfect World to get him scheduled again. And, you know, and really go over some of these things, because these are things that I think that would be groundbreaking for the product, even moving forward even further than it's already been taken. You know, the collaboration aspect and, you know, scaling of, you know, resources, like you were saying, tinting. You know, these are things that me and Mark here take for granted working on Neverwinter Nights 2. I mean, that's stock, out-of-the-box functionality, you know, scaling placeables, creatures, tinting. You know, there's all that stuff is pretty much out of the box, ready to go. You know, not having it in a game as such as good as Neverwinter, it's, you know, that's a big possible improvement that would really blow the doors off even further what can be done. So
I think it would be possible if you were, if you had a group of people that you fully trusted one another to create an account, maybe, that everyone had access to. The problem with that is, you know, for me, with, like, say, Scribes Enclave, if someone else had the account info, there's no way for me to keep them from just taking it. So it right. would have to, you know, the only way to do that, it'd have to be somebody that you completely and fully trust.
Yeah, well, that and the fact that it might violate their EULA agreement, you know, yeah. the terms and agreements when you sign up. So, I mean, obviously you want to make sure that you do that because you don't want your account getting smoked because, oh, hey, we noticed 10 people with different IP addresses logging into it at the same time or something, you know. So that's something definitely be careful about there. But, you know, but then again, I mean, when you look at a product like the Foundry and what it ultimately could be used to do, you know, having a ability of a team to collaborate and work together in a repository setting would be far better, you know, for that type of a project than having one person only being able to work on their product. So
yeah, because, you know, some people are better at the scenery and some people are better at the dialogue, and you know, everyone has something they're really good at, and they might not have an interest or, you know, not be quite as good at something else. It would be nice to be able to work together with those sorts of things.
In closing, I want to thank you again for coming on. Is there anything else, you know, we didn't cover in this interview that you'd like to bring out to the audience or stuff that, you know, just comes to mind now?
Well, if I could talk about Scribes Enclave for
a
moment.
That's great. Yeah, sure.
You know, we started, one of our founding members, Redneck Ronan, had made a comment on the public forums that it would be nice to have a group of people who just reviewed quests to help get everyone past that 5 review, 20 play mark. And that's where the idea originally came from. And back at that time, there were a lot of trolls on the public forum, just to put it bluntly. It was not a friendly place to be, especially for new authors, someone just coming in. So when I created Scribes Enclave, it was kind of like a safe haven to get away from all that negativity. And now the forums are not as bad as what they were during that time. There's not as much negativity now, which is good. Scribes Enclave, right now there's 117 names on the roster, but not everyone is still active. You know, some people have lost interest in the Foundry. It is still an MMO, and, you know, people come and go a lot, but we do still have some core members who are still there, and everyone helps each other. You know, we haven't had any fights among our members. We haven't had any negativity on our forums, anything like that. It's just been a great group of people, and I've been very humbled at the way that they treat each other and the way that they treat me. You know, like I said, I gave too when I lost my quest, and it was my friends from Scribes Enclave that kept me there, kept me going. And, you know, if any of the members are listening right now, I'm sorry that I haven't had as much time to help everyone out lately, but I'm hoping that my home life is going to get settled to it. I went from having hours every day to work on that stuff to, you know, just having a few minutes every day. So I haven't been as much help as I wish I could be, but I know that the members are still there and they're still helping each other. And I just want them to know that I'm hanging in there as long as I can.
Yeah, it definitely gets frustrating, you know, when you want to put the time in, you just can't. it is frustrating. I mean, it's especially, you know, having a day job, even, you know, for us, it's difficult for, you know, individual staff members to be able to put the hours in that we want to sometimes, you know, and when you can't, you definitely get that sense of like, oh man, I need to, you know, I want to get this done. And, you know, after a couple of days, then a week goes by and you really haven't been able to put much time into it. It does get frustrating. So I can definitely understand that.
Well, there's been times when, you know, I just haven't been available to be in the game at all. And, you know, I come back and, you know, I felt bad about it for a while, but, you know, I realized after a while that pretty much everybody goes through that. There's times when they're just like right now, Sorcerer King isn't around. And, you know, he's been here, you know, it's not that he doesn't care. He's been here since the beginning of the server, just about.
Right. Absolutely.
So I don't know. It's just kind of a natural thing, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, you can't dwell on it, so that's for sure.
Right. My hope for Scribes Enclave is that, and it does do this, that we're not all there every day, and things don't always move very fast, but there's enough people there that care that there's always some, you know, happening. There's always someone there. There's always someone helping someone else with the quest. It's not crowded every day, but it's still going. You know, it's consistent, maybe kind of slow at times, but it's still pretty consistent.
Yeah, that's good. That really is what it comes down to. I mean, when you have a constant forward progression, even if it is a little slower than you might want, it's still forward progression at the end of the day. And you have people that are dedicating time that they're not getting paid for. I mean, this is all, hey, this personal, you know, whatever, to fulfill your own personal feelings and what things that you want to do. I mean, there's none of this stuff is money making, really. And that's the thing that people got to understand, too. Got to pay the bills, too, somehow. Yep. You know, with that, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. And, you know, as customary, Neverwinter Nights podcast, we give you the closing line.
Till next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.